You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
This is Dion Morales, and you are listening to your X-Wing Easter Basket. William Hegwood, the Hoth Open champion, was kind enough to record three awesome interviews for us. He spoke with Zach Rayburn of FFG Organized Play, Max Brook, the newest game developer for X-Wing, and the Coruscant Invitational champion, Jeremy Chambly, also known as the Great Chambalaya from the Kessel Run podcast. Before I go, I'll leave you with an exciting announcement. I have had some interest in people buying Gold Squadron Podcast t-shirts, and we're going to make this happen. So we're going to be taking pre-orders for them all the way through, starting today, all the way through May 30th. The only way to get a shirt is to pre-order it and pay for it. Details are going to be in the show notes and posted on our Facebook. Let's get to our interviews. Have a good one.
Unlock the hologram.
All right, this is William Hegwood with Gold Squadron Podcast. We just wrapped up the Coruscant Invitational, and I have Max Brook here, one of the developers with FFG, to ask him some questions. Max, what did you think of the Invitational?
I thought it was a really great event. It ran really smoothly. Everyone was really friendly and pleasant the whole time. It was very relaxed for us because it's only eight people. You know, Worlds is 300, and that's all sorts of, you know, crazy chaos. It's fun, and I love Worlds, but it's definitely like a very different experience. This is a much more, you know, laid back.
Yeah, the word we were using was casual.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny. It's the best, you know, some of the best players in the world, but it's this very casual event, you know, and it's kind of nice. It's a fun thing to do. It's nice to, you know, nice to have these less, you know, high intensity games that are still good games. They're just, you know, doesn't feel like there's, you know, the whole, you know, like the whole X-Wing world isn't in the room watching. You know, they're watching maybe, but they're not all like present, you know. So it's nice. It was relaxing compared to a lot of things. It was also, you know, wasn't as many rounds. I mean, obviously, Worlds, by the end of it, everyone is very tired, whereas I think people still have some energy. You know, I expect people are probably going to go out to dinner and hang out and all that, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I think we wrapped up three games in about 4 hours, maybe a little bit less, actually. So I'm going to switch gears then over to the design of the three new ships that you guys have announced. What was your reason for choosing those ships?
So we always have sort of a list of ships we're looking at and we're talking about, and, you know, like we always make sure we want to be doing things that are going to, you know, line up well with things that Lucasfilm is pushing and that are, you know, in various things. But we also have like others we've been wanting to revisit that we've had on the list for a long time. So like the Skurg, for instance, you know, we have been thinking about for a while. It appeared in Armada, obviously, so, you know, like, it's been on our radar. That's a ship we like a lot, and this was just sort of, like, the right time to do it. And we've been thinking, oh, well, it would be cool if, you know, Scum got sort of a dedicated bomber. You know, they've got plenty of bomb options, but this is, like, really a dedicated bombing ship. So that's, you know, that was one thing. I mean, another thing was the TIE Aggressor was also a ship we've been thinking about for a long time. Obviously, the Empire hasn't previously had access to the turret slot, so this will open up some cool new options for them, give them some gameplay options. And it plays pretty differently from a Y-Wing. You know, it sort of started life in Galaxies as the Y-Wing equivalent, but it feels quite different from a Y-Wing, but it gives the Empire sort of a new, you know, like, mid to long range sniper option, which can be cool, or a real, you know, like, real knife fighter if you put the right turret on it. So it's sort of this neat thing that we've been thinking about for a while, and this was just sort of the right time to do it. And the Azatuk, obviously, that's a lot newer. That's from Rebels. And so there's a lot of cool new information about that. And we love the way that looks. And the, I mean, as you saw in the case, I'm sure the paint job is just beautiful.
It's my favorite ship out of the three, I think.
Yeah.
Visually, my favorite ship.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, our art and production and all those folks worked really hard on it. And, you know, you can see in the preview art, the art pieces look really awesome, too. And it's this really cool new visually striking ship, and we found some cool mechanical niches to give it that I can't get too much into. I think we showed some of them off in the in the preview article, but I can't go too much into the nitty-gritty details yet, but I can talk about that later someday when it's out. But it's fun. It's a neat little ship, and it plays differently from others.
Right, because it has a similar stat line to a B-Wing.
Yeah, it's got a similar stat line, but it's got a very different set of other things, attributes, shall we say.
You got reinforce.
Yeah.
180 arc.
Mm-hmm.
And two crew.
Yeah. So that opens up a lot of new options. It's like there's some stuff in there, obviously, that plays with the two crew slots, but there's also stuff that suddenly new combos are much easier to do in the Rebellion, and having it on a small ship versus a large ship like the Falcon or the U-Wing sort of changes the dynamic, because it's like, oh, that fills a different role in a group that's moving together. So if you want to do some of the characters who synergize really well together, now you can try putting them in that. So that's a neat sort of new way it's playing with that existing slot that Rebels have so many options for.
I've noticed, let's see, so the aggressor has the two-slotted missile, unguided?
I think we showed that one in the preview.
It's got two missiles, you can't modify, but you have to have a focus.
Yep.
You can modify with the focus. And then the other two upgrade slot was the Wookiee Commandos for the Wookiee gunship.
Yep.
Obviously, you've done this with Palpatine in the past. Is that something that you look at as kind of a restriction of what ships can use certain upgrades?
Very much so. I mean, it obviously has that effect. And, the Wookiee Commandos, are a card that we felt very safe printing, as a two-slot card. As a one-slot card, that would be that effect might be pretty dangerous at that cost. But a two-slot, the options for it, it's like, well, it's only a couple ships that can take it. We know exactly which ships those are. We don't think this is necessarily the best option for those crew slots, because you're sort of already paying a premium for those in Rebels. The nice thing about it on the Azatuk is that, because the Azatuk isn't, it certainly is not as expensive as the Falcon, in terms of squad points, you might just want to kind of do a cheap one, put the commandos on it and call it good. But you also might take it as a sort of a little minivan party, party minivan, shall we say, to the party bus of the YV666.
It's also the only small base ship with two crews as well, right?
The TIE shuttle has that option too.
But it can't take Wookiee Commandos,
because they're Rebel only, and that was mostly a thematic restriction. We weren't too worried about the TIE shuttle having them necessarily, but we thought it wouldn't make much sense,
right, keep it
unless they were Wookiee prisoners. Maybe that's a two true card for the future. Wookiee prisoners
Could have been a great opportunity for a dual sided there.
Yeah, there you go.
It's also small. It's a very small model.
Yeah, it's not a very large small ship. It's a little bigger than an A-wing, but it's not it's not huge, and it's got a bigger body than an X-wing. It looks like it has more, probably fits more people in it. I mean, it obviously does. We know how many. It fits a whole bunch of angry Wookiees. An X-wing wouldn't really fit more than one of those. But because of the X-Wing's wingspan, it looks bigger. Whereas this is very compact. It's very efficient, shall we say, for its size. You can cram a lot of Wookiees in there.
I've heard it's made of wood and sap as well.
Well, so that's interesting. That's part of some of the materials about it. So there's some stuff about that. We suspect that the way that probably works in practice is that the whole ship isn't made of wood and sap. It's that the those are incorporated into it. And there's also some old legend stuff about how, the Rosher trees of Kashyyyk are actually incredibly hard and durable. And so it's probably, worked in the interior in some way. The Rebels visual guide talks about that, but it doesn't actually specify how much of the ship is made of wood, and it doesn't even say it's a ship made of wood. It says it just uses wood in its design. Right. So it might just be interior paneling, or maybe it's some sort of, I don't know, maybe it's some sort of lightweight material to help support parts of the frame, but it still has armor plates or something. We don't really know exactly how it works, but it makes sense that the Wookiees would want to bring a little bit of their home world with them, wherever they go.
Well, it'd be an easy resource for them to get
exactly.
As well. So I'm not going to ask you about the recent FAQ. I personally think it was appropriate. So end of discussion. But there was one part of it, the targeting synchronizer. It was originally a confusing card because there was a term that wasn't defined before in the game. Why did you go with the ruling on it that was in the latest FAQ?
Yeah, so during the development of it, we, you know, initially, as we were concepting the card, we didn't think about using the default target lock, passing the default target lock effect around. But, you know, during testing, we kind of realized, well, you know, it actually works okay. And we tested it, and it didn't seem to be overpowered. So we said, actually, that kind of works. So we kept it. But, yeah, it's definitely, it can be a pretty nuanced card to use. It's got some layers to it. But we think it's not too overly confusing. I mean, it mostly seems to make sense, and we made sure, you know, people got it when they read it most of the time. But obviously, you know, that's what the FAQ is for, right? To make sure that we cover those things, you know, thoroughly enough for everybody, and make sure that there's an easy resource where you can check stuff like that.
Yeah, because I think because of it's only when attacking, which means cold status ability, advanced targeting computer, similar things like that just simply don't work and wouldn't work even if the wording said anything else. Anything other than when attacking. Interesting. It gives it similar to Shara Bay's ability then with that you could use their target locks.
I think there might be some subtle differences between the two, but it's pretty similar. Yeah, it certainly has a similar outcome. Shara Bay is good, but she doesn't seem to be, you know, like, doesn't seem to be overpowered. So that was another good indicator that it was like, well, it's a good effect, but, you know, it's probably safe.
Yeah, it's hard to maximize that other than on Nora. Nora seems to be the popular use of Shara Bay's ability.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me interject one second.
All right, thank you, Max, for your time. And for writing all of this, I mean, FFG paid for my ticket, so I appreciate that very much, okay?
Yeah, well, obviously, thanks for coming out here to do all this stuff. We, you know, like, we want to make sure people are, you know, excited about X-Men. There's cool events going on like this, and so thanks for helping be a part of this, and, you know, thanks for talking to me.
No problem, Max. Thank you. All right, so I'm here with Jeremy, what's your last name? I didn't even think of it to ask you that.
Chamblee,
that's why you're what on the forums and whatnot?
The Great Chambalaya.
Chambalaya, that's right. I remember. All right, so we just wrapped up the Coruscant Invitational. You got matched up with Zek, who I believe is a rematch from the Mustafar.
That is correct. I wrecked him at Mustafar, and I wrecked him here.
I wouldn't necessarily call losing your TIE Striker in the first round of combat before she would wrecking him.
Paul Jr. died so that we could live.
All right.
Paul Jr.'s sacrifice will never be forgotten.
So it's actually an interesting tale about how you got onto the final table. You're 2-1.
Yes.
You had just beat the Spanish Open winner.
Tatooine.
Tatooine.
Jesus.
Jesus. He had just beat him to go 2-1, but he was also then 2-1.
Yes.
So how did the tiebreaker break down for that?
So, the games in our pod came down to 2-2-0s against.
When he says "our," that he's including myself.
I'm including yourself. So yeah, we had 2-2-0s. We had 2-1-1s. Awkward. I won my game, so we both went 2-1. And then we got over here, William played Mishari, and he won, which means that they knock each other out, effectively. And then because it was me and Jesus tied, the tiebreaker is head-to-head, and I beat him head-to-head, so I won.
So just to recap what you just said, me beating Mishari got you into the finals?
That is correct. You are the MVP of the Coruscant Invitational.
That's true. I beat Mishari by Deathfire and my 3 Bomber Omega Leader squad.
Mishari beat me in first round.
What did he beat you with?
I played Hera. I played the Hera Gator. Hera with TLT, Fire Control, Navigator, Cassian, Ghost, and then Zeb docked in there.
Cassian, that's a weird choice on that. Why? Self-bumping? Or I guess you could... It's an enhanced intelligence agent, right?
I picked Cassian because I either had enough points to fit in Cassian and Autoblaster on Zeb, or 3BO on Hera, and then like a intel agent on Zeb. Just, you know, who cares? If Zeb's out, you lose anyway, so what does it matter?
Why not Accuracy Corrector and Intelligence Agent?
I thought about it, but I don't know. I like the Fire Control because it lets me be a bit greedy with the primary. Accuracy Corrector caps at 2 on primary, and I like throwing 5 dice at people with Target Lock.
Well, that was a bad choice because you got wrecked, so...
Yeah, it's true. I am bad at this game, so that's absolutely true.
How about you, what else did you build in your list? Because we're building 77 to recap,
yep.
Then we drafted the ship. So tell me about what list you brought,
okay.
If you remember what order you drafted in, and why you picked your draft picks.
Okay, so my lists I brought the Harrogator because I thought it would be kind of fun. Something different.
It's actually a one-ship 77-point build.
It's a one-ship 77-point build. It's pretty cool. Very skill-intensive, because unless you play, you gotta play it right, or you get wrecked like I did, because I'm bad.
You're calling changing your dial mid-turn skill-intensive, but go on.
It is. Well, when your pilot skill 7, it's wonderful. I got wrecked, so I'm bad. My Empire list, I had Quickdraw, whom I love dearly. she was decked out with like Fire Control, Lightweight Frame, that whole bit, and Pirate Analyzer. I couldn't take Pirate Analyzer, so I wrote Targeting Synchronizer. It was in my squad builder and everything. But for some reason, I brought Pattern Analyzer with me instead, and we couldn't find it. We begged for the FFG guys, everybody who came in. Nobody had it, so I just rolled with the Pattern Analyzer.
It turned out to work for you. Even Max Brook forgot that debris stresses during the check for pilot... stress or whatever that's called phase, yeah. That pattern analyzer actually works around.
Yes, it does. It's wonderful.
Did you know that when...
I did know that coming in.
Nice.
That's why I willingly threw off the debris, because I didn't care.
I believe you barreled off of debris as well.
Barreled off of it, yeah. Well, the template didn't touch, so it's cool.
That works.
Yes,
I want to... Paul, and even Max Brook. Questioned if you could do that, but apparently with the rules it does allow
apparently
you to do
I
that.
Can. We'll see. I think I did just win the System Open series tournaments. I think I know what I'm doing.
With a card that you didn't actually bring to the tournament. Yeah.
So I took that, and then I took Rexler Brath with Expertise and X7 and Mark IIs. I love Rexler. Always been a big fan of his. And with Expertise, I can do...
Have a safe flight.
Thanks. I can do Expertise. I can light somebody up. And I'm just getting the focus token to turn that damage card I dealt to you face up, which is how I one-shotted a Z95.
Yeah, beautiful. The other time you tried that, it didn't work at all, did
Major
it?
Major hull, but you know, whatever, the Zs.
That is an interesting combination. I hadn't thought about that because I played you when you were using the pattern analyzer.
Yes. So if I'm using targeting synchronizer, Rexler can spend quick draws target lock.
Right,
so I can take focus actions with Rexler and use quick draws target lock.
Giving him a fully modified attack that is fully critted as
with,
well.
With a focus on the focus on deck, just in case I deal some damage cards.
Perfect.
It's tasty.
Do those flip up one at a time?
Where's Max? Ask him.
You're the expert.
No, nope, I don't know what I'm doing.
Okay.
Scum list was I took I won was far with Peritani, so I wanted to you dance with the girl who brung you, so I took Invitani, and Invitani is Fenrir with Mind Link thrusters title, Medru with Mind Link, and then Kato Lichos with Mind Link tracers and chips.
Why?
Mostly because I wanted to bring a Mind Link list just to say that I did.
Fair enough. Did you win with it?
I did.
Did you win barely with it?
I don't know. That was the game against Jesus where Miranda and Fenrir died in the same turn. So it came down to Manaru and Kato and the quad jumper against Stress Hog and B-Wing.
So a turret beats one agility ships is what you're saying.
I'm saying a pilot skill 4 turret that can get 2 actions from Kato mind linking in the corner somewhere. Yeah, apparently that's better than having 1 agility PS2 ships.
Who knew? A big revelation here at the Coruscant Invitational. You just beat Zach. Yes. Brought your striker draft pick. Yes. What else did you draft?
So I drafted second in the order. We got a random order. I got drafted second just behind this guy named Paul something. I forgot his name. I don't know. Some old guy. Who cares?
Some short old guy.
Yeah, right. So I got to draft second in the first draft, and then I draft second to last in the second draft, and then because Mustafar had the second least people, I got to draft third to last because Radislaw couldn't make it, so Zach drafted last as the alternate.
Yeah, I chose, I was the fourth round pick, I was paired, numbered.
You're talking about yourself.
I will say things about myself on my own podcast.
This is all about this.
It's technically Dion's podcast.
You have any idea who I am? I'm on the system of it.
Anyway, so I was numbered fourth, so I got to pick the first round. I chose Imperials because Paul was picking first. So why did you choose the Striker?
I chose the Striker because Paul took the TIE Interceptor.
And that's what you wanted?
Yes, it is.
All right, well, I saw you also pick up the Quad Jumper. Why?
I picked the Quad Jumper because that was last faction was Scum. That's right, because who picked fifth?
That's Snake. It wasn't me. I picked third in that round.
No. Who picked fifth? Like, who picked the faction?
That was Andres.
Andres. Yeah. So the guy, my roommate, stabbed me in the back, and picked Rebels for the second draft. Because so we knew that Paul was going to pick last. So I was like, dude, pick Scum. Give him the Star Viper. We want Paul to have the Star Viper, but he stabbed me in the back. My own roommate. It was terrible.
No, it makes more sense to give Paul, which the ship nobody wanted, which was the A-Wing opportunist
the A-Wing
thing.
Was, the A-Wing was a good call. Yes, we did Rebels, and I picked second to last. So my options were the A-Wing with, like, opportunist and stuff and stealth device, or good old-fashioned T-65 with R2 astromech and seismic torps, which I did use those in my game with Mashari to blow up an asteroid and do damage to a Z, and the X-Men killed it afterwards. So
successful.
Successful
draft picks. I believe
in half my games, the seismic torpedoes were highly relevant.
Including our game, where I was, it was what, down to Miranda?
It was either Miranda on 3 and Rexler on 1.
Yeah, Rexler was about to K-turn, Miranda had initiative, and I came in for a risky...
So you did 2 forward, then a slam, and using the advanced slam, you fired off the seismic, and that's, you know, that's a 50-50 shot to just win the game right there. Whiffed, and then Miranda took a damage. Rex 4K'd and blew her out of the sky.
Yep.
That was it.
That was it. That was the game. This is the invitational. If you're not taking big risks, I don't know what you're doing.
You make the big plays. I flew quick draw through debris a couple times in that final just to get some extra good positioning on it.
I thought you were trying to lose the shield.
That's a bonus.
If bonus. That happens, you know.
Whatever.
So in the final game, there was some controversy about some things, but I'm not gonna talk about that.
Controversy.
I don't. You can find out about that later. Anyways, my question for you was, how did
everyone knows that everyone knows that like the high level X-wing always looks like bad X-wing. Good X-wing looks like terrible X-wing.
So you lost your striker first round of combat.
Paul Jr.
Paul Jr. Last Paul Jr. First round
Paul
of combat.
Paul Jr. designed that ship, so I wanted to take it in his honor. I wanted to use it to avenge him.
You made after losing him right away, you had brought Biggs down to 1 health before he started healing. It was an R2-D2 Biggs.
Yes. So basically, I come down and see 2 Zs, and I see Biggs, and I see Poe. I say, Poe doesn't have regen. Cool. That makes things a bit easier. So I split my guys up. I split the party to Quick Draw and Rexler around the bottom. I took Paul Jr. way up top. And there's a big debris cloud in the middle, so the idea is hopefully I force him to split or force him to commit to one. Whichever one he commits to, the other half punishes him. So he went for the striker, which means I was kind of free to do whatever I wanted with Quick Draw and Rex. I get to hit Biggs a bit, do some damage. First round wasn't very good. I lost Paul. He lost Paul Jr. early, which sucked. But
without a shot.
With some crazy dice too. We rolled.
You shot a proton torpedo.
Proton torpedo, yeah. We rolled all hits. We rolled all hits and evades. It was nuts. So Paul Jr. died. And then I did some damage to Biggs. And then Biggs is going to start regaining and coming away. All right, cool. Rex is going to... And because X7 got changed, I can't 4K fearlessly, like with no fear. I have to actually think about stuff. Gasp. So Rex just bails out to reposition, quick draw sloops, and I can power an analyzer. Yay, to keep firing on Biggs. And we just traded for a while. And Aziz and Poe just could not get through Rexler with the focus of aid.
Yeah, he was focusing on Rexler, and Rexler was just tanking very well with that focus of aid.
Because he feared the quick draw. With good reason. I mean, quick draw is not your friend.
Yeah, after you lose your regen chip from quick draw, Poe ended up... he got stressed at one point when he didn't BB.
Didn't BBA because he couldn't, because there's a rock in the way. So he couldn't BBA out of the way. And then Aziz dropped eventually. Rex doing the hit, three hits, blank out, shield, spend the focus.
Those Z's had terrible green dice.
Those Z's were silly. Actually, the Z's did as much damage as Poe did to my rest of my list. Poe did two shields off of quick draw, and AZ knocked two shields off of Rexler. And Rex and Quickdraw do it. Rex and Quickdraw do disease. You just chew them up. And then I'm chasing Poe the rest of the game.
Yeah, Poe, did Poe ever get a shot after he disengaged? Nope. Or tried to disengage? I believe Rex was on him the whole time.
Yeah. Rex 4K'd behind him. Quickdraw flew through the debris to get a better shot. And we just circled around for a while.
And then, Poe never took a shot again?
Never took a shot. It was a matter of time. Now, Poe's worth more than each of my two ships individually. So had he killed one, he would have won on time, most likely.
Individually?
Yeah, his Poe, he had PS9 Poe with everything.
No way, because you're running a 77-point list, and he had Biggs with him.
Yeah, his Poe was worth, 50 points, or 40-something. His Biggs is worth 28.
So you're saying if he would have killed one...
If he had would have killed one of those ships, he could have won on time.
He would go going for time.
The fact that I had two ships means I can basically chase at my leisure, and then that means I win, unless he can kill one.
Now, Zach is a great player, but I will say that he did forget about Black One, which I may or may not. I don't think it cost him the game, but
no, it would have had an impact. But I mean, once the Z's and Biggs go away, Black One could be a thing.
All right, well, we're gonna wrap up, Jeremy. I appreciate your time. You have a good flight. You're heading out. You're not staying for another day?
No, I'm leaving tonight.
So this is your whole Star Wars Celebration. What was in?
That's it.
Room 309.
That's me. That's what I do.
All right. Well, I'm glad you came down.
Thank you.
To casually win the most casual invitational of X-Wing.
But thank you for making it possible.
All right, man. Thank you. So once again, finishing up the Coruscant Invitational. I'm with Zach Ray Byrne of... Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, I got it right. Hooray. 3 for 3. I forgot Jeremy's last name. Damn it. Spoiler alert if these aren't in the right order. Anyways, Zach works with FFG. Organized play, and was... What was your official job in this Invitational?
So I'm the organized play manager, and as the manager, I get to pick who goes to Celebration, and it was me.
All right. You chose.
Yeah, I came down here to make sure the event ran really smoothly. I had the assistance of Max Brooks, our great marshal today, and then Brent, who is an amazing judge that comes around to all of our events, or not all, but a lot of our events, and we love having him as one of our contractors.
So this is the second year for the open season. What was your thoughts on this year, so the 2017 open series?
I loved it. I think we made some improvements from last year. It was a little bit more flexible for some different venues. You know, last year, seven of the events were in Europe and one was in the U.S. This year, we knew we were going to do more in the U.S., seeing as how Celebration was in the U.S. And so we wanted to make sure that the events could kind of conform to the types of venues and places that we thought Cascade Games, who ended up running four of the five of them, could end up hosting them. And I think they went off really well in a lot of those venues. We learned a lot. And the format of the events, being seven rounds the first day and then either two or three rounds of Swiss in the morning on the second day, depending on whether we get over 320 players or not, cutting into the top eight, worked really well for pretty much all the events across the board. So I was really enthused. I think the community turned out in big fashion for a lot of them this year, especially in the U.S., which was really fun to see. And I'm looking forward to future years of continuing to support such an awesome series.
Yeah, I really like that 320 number because the Hoth Open was 319,
yeah.
meaning we only had to play 9 games and 2 in the morning. Well, not at 2 in the morning, but we played 2 on the second day.
Exactly. Yeah, no. The 7 rounds make sure that, you know, it's a round longer than what I would call our ideal round day length for people. Like 6 rounds really feels in our surveying of people as like the number that you want to be playing in a day to get a full experience at a competitive event. So the 7 is just beyond that limit, but it allows us to have that flexibility for the second day to make sure that that day you are playing a maximum of 6 rounds instead of a maximum of 7 rounds, which on Sunday at a convention when they, you know, close early or something is really hard to pull off. So we think that was a great choice. That was based on some feedback from some of the organizers last year, and we took it and ran with it, and I think it'll be a good thing to think about when we design how people are going to play in future system open series.
Yeah, I believe with regionals and some other larger events, the 2-day play so many games and then come back for maybe additional games plus the cut the second day is much better. I remember one of my first tournaments, 6 games and then it cut to top 8. So if you won, you played 9 games that day, and that's brutal.
Yeah, it's a lot of games. You know, not to say that X-Wing gets boring or, you know, whatever, but it is a mentally intense sport to come in and figure out how to fly these ships around all day. So making sure that people are refreshed when they come in to play those rounds that really matter near the end of the tournament and the cut is very important to us. So I'm much more in favor of doing things like this in the future. As you may have seen for the regional championships for the non-Star Wars games that we're doing coming up here May through August, we've got this new limited kit and limited prize kit thing that goes with some of them, where those regionals turn from a usually 1-day event, though we give organizers the option to run them as Swiss on the first day and elimination rounds on the second day. The limited kits really say, hey, this event is going to be 2 days. It is going to be worth your time to travel to, because even if you don't make the second day, here's some prizes that you can win on the second day from the limited kit and the limited prize kit. So I'm really looking forward to how we implement that for the Star Wars games coming up for regional championships November through February.
That'd be awesome, because you just dropped the summer kit, if I remember right. It's got the abades in it. That's cute. It's not so called summer. It's called
quarter,
what?
Quarter two. Yeah, we started going by quarters because, as it turns out, we're spread pretty widely around the world these days, and those seasons, you don't think about it, but they are different in the southern hemisphere.
So that makes a lot of sense, actually. So you just saw the Invitational. We actually wrapped up pretty fast. We started later than expected and got to the final game at 5:00 on time. What was your impression of the tournament and any comments you had about?
So I ended up doing a lot today. We did a lot of the Twitter coverage and everything else, and I wish I would have had a little more time to actually dive in and review the different lists and whatnot, because that was the part that excited me the most, was this new 77 plus format is really kind of an innovative way to have people look at the game and think about what they're building, what they're bringing to fly with. So that 77 point restriction of your own list that you have to bring for each of the 3 factions really is a big change once you start thinking about it. You know, the 100 points is already this restriction that everybody's mind works inside of, and they evaluate cards and ships and different pilots and abilities and whatnot based on this idea of what is someone else going to bring with 100 points. But it's an entirely different equation when you think, what are they going to bring with 77 points? And then what are they going to get in addition to that from this draft pool? So cards that may not be good against a list full of, you know, hand-selected ships, ships that add up to 100 points become really good when you're playing against a couple of, you know, at least one non-unique pilot who probably has a bad pilot skill, or maybe doesn't, or, you know, maybe has, you know, a little weaker ship to go with him or something like that. So it's really a change of pace for a lot of people. And I wish I could have looked at that a little more closely, but looking at those final three lists for each of the people that made the finals, it seemed like everybody had a lot of fun with it, that it was a great avenue to go down. You know, it was a great way to commemorate the 40th anniversary of Star Wars, with it debuting in 1977. The innovativeness of things like this being well received is what really tells us to go and do more of it. So, you know, you can expect to see some cool stuff like that in the future as the developers and organized play think of interesting things for everybody to explore.
Speaking of the future, it's the second year for the open season, or the open series. Is that something you guys plan to continue?
So we definitely love how the open series went this past 2 years. Some of you may know, the System Open Series culminate here at the Coruscant Invitational, which we've held at Star Wars Celebration the past 2 years. But Star Wars Celebration announced that they are not holding another convention until 2019 recently. So, in tandem with that, we're exploring our options right now. I don't want to commit to doing the exact System Open Series you all may know and love right now, but I can tell you we definitely want to do something next year that kind of carries on the spirit and the built expectations of doing an awesome thing like this for players that falls outside of our normal championship series and quarterly kits.
Well, that'd be cool. If you do continue it, I hope you can find a place to at least hold the Invitational. Some place up north in the cold.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, you know, there's all directions you can go with it, right? The invitational system of, you know, having just a select number of people come and play a tournament is a really cool way to focus and hone people's attention, but it's not the only way, right? There's also ways of, you know, inviting a lot of people, or, you know, having an event where people who just performed at a certain level at the different events that happen around the world can come and join. You know, there's a lot of ways to approach it, and we're exploring all of them right now. I can't really speak to which avenue we'll go down for sure, but I can imagine you'll hear something sometime before the end of the year for sure.
That would definitely be interesting to kind of open it up to the top elimination players, with maybe the top player getting a first round bye or something like that. You never know.
Yeah, no, we could go any number of ways. In as many ways as you could think about it, we're probably exploring those options as well.
Is that something that you like, this kind of open series that is outside of your normal regionals, nationals, worlds tournaments?
So the championship series is definitely our main focus for every game. You know, it provides this really cool avenue that really stresses to players and fans what we think is the most important element of organized play, and that is your local game store, right? That's really the key. That's the place that can build and hone these communities of players that turn into things like Gold Squadron and these other great community, you know, elements that are out there in the world. So I definitely want to point people towards their local game store anytime I can. That being said, we also have a function of making sure that we're marketing the games to a wider audience as well, to make sure there's more and more people who are interested in going into their local game store to play these championship series and quarterly kit events. And so to that end, excuse me one second.
Okay, go ahead.
To that end, we've got this System Open Series that happens at these other prestigious locations around the world. You know, we've had them at locations like UK Games Expo and, you know, some prominent game conventions in France and elsewhere in Europe. And then we had one this year just outside of PAX South and at Emerald City Comic Con. You know, it exposes the game to a much wider base of players and individuals, and that long term is very valuable and necessary for a game. So doing that kind of thing is very important to us. We don't do it to take players away from their local game store. We do it to drive more in to those local game stores. And then big events like this, where, you know, we put a lot of attention on a small number of players that come to an elite thing here at Star Wars Celebration, is really important too. There's a whole another galaxy of players out there that are coming through the booth this weekend and demoing X-Wing and our other games. There's a whole flux of people who maybe have bought a Corset or two and are just using those as display models on their shelf, and they find out you can play an awesome game with it and all the things that are available to them, and that there's even this, you know, inspirational kind of thing for them to play to get trips to elite events like this. And suddenly you have more players coming into that little game store to play with, and that really helps support communities. So we want to focus on that, but I'm a big fan of doing things like this as well. On top of it all, it provides people like you with an awesome experience that, you know, you get to take home and tell your friends about forever. So we're glad to have that happen.
Yeah, I'll be bragging about it for a while. But you do make a great point. I mean, I was at Adepticon, which is a miniatures convention. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a different audience. People would come up and be like, ooh, look at those cool miniatures. And I'd be like, yes, it's a Star Wars game. But here at Celebration, it's a completely different vibe. We have people cosplaying as Rey and Luke walking in and looking at the different ships and being like, oh, man, those are cool Star Wars ships. Then we're like, oh, it's also a very complex game, if you like the models as well. So you're really hitting both core audiences of that, of miniature gamers, people who want the depth of the game, and people just love Star Wars.
Yep.
Which is what really Celebration's all about.
Oh, definitely. And we're so happy to be a part of it. This year, having our own games room to play the tournament in and have other games going on. We had staff challenges for some of our other games, and even some role-playing sessions that, you know, you really don't get to do at venues like this ever, you know.
You certainly couldn't do that on the show floor.
No, certainly not. So being able to do that up here in our own room is really incredible. It's been packed all weekend for you know, people waiting to play frequently with either staff or just some of our, you know, pre-built things to have them start running through games. And a lot of them are getting sent up here from the booth where they might have played for the first time this weekend and were so interested that they wanted to spend some of their time here at this event that they've, you know, saved up for and set aside on their calendars for months to come and spend some time with us is really a pleasure. And, you know, we really treasure that there's people that want to engage with our games like that at a big venue like this.
Yeah, not just the new players, but experienced players. I was new to Destiny, so I got to try that out. I think it's well made. I'm not personally a card game person myself, so it's a little bit of a hurdle for me to get into it, but I definitely enjoyed it. But it's also good to see people who have traveled from all around the world to play the games they play at home to Star Wars Celebration. Some of the other Open Series winners brought their Destiny decks, and we brought other 100-point lists, and I saw a lot of people just coming here to not only learn about the game, but experience, like I said, experienced players wanting to play the game with other Star Wars fans as well.
Definitely. And it's that kind of cross-pollination that really kind of helps drive those people back in. You know, there's a ton of people that travel to big conventions like this, but there's also a ton of people locally that come in, you know, who might be from the surrounding communities. And so the people that are here that, you know, maybe avid players that play on a weekly basis at their local store are intermingling with people that they would have never met before. Like, there's no chance whatsoever that they would have ever integrated with these people that are huge Star Wars fans. And lo and behold, with all the mobile games and everything else out there today, where everybody's really a gamer at heart, coming in and seeing these games and integrating with those people, and letting them tell them about how you can come into my local store and play next week, and, you know, we'll teach you how, and we can tell you exactly how to get in, and the most you know, efficient builds and all that kind of good stuff, really sells this community vibe that really makes all these games great, you know. So we're happy to have done that. I'm hoping in 2 years that we get to do this on an even bigger scale, and we'll look forward to what we can do in 2019.
Perfect. I did see you personally taking those OP pictures.
Yep.
Where can you find out more information about organized play?
So the best place is fantasyflightgames.com/OP. And that's our website that has links to all the relevant information. The thing that I really hope people explore, especially if this might be the first time that they've been exposed to the fact that there are cool events for games that they turn out to love, like X-Wing, that they can click on through there and find, you know, their local events like store championships, and those kind of locations are also going to support quarterly kits and regular recurring events as well. We have an events page that lists all those upcoming things. It had all the details from the Open Series if you want to get a recap on the community voting that selected some of the squads that people drafted from with our 77-plus draft format. And you can even get all the information about it so that you could run a 77 draft at home as a special event, so, or in your local game store, of course. So I'm hoping that people get to explore more on our website. Follow us on Twitter, of course. FFGOP is our account. And read all the cool coverage from today. And then I'm looking forward to hanging out with more of these people again at Worlds. So that's coming up here beginning of May.
Oh, yeah, that's right around the corner.
Indeed.
For you guys. All right, well, thank you, Zach, for your time. And hope to see you next year at Celebration then.
Yeah, it was an absolute pleasure, William. Thanks for coming.
Do you live in the Chicagoland area or plan on visiting? Come on down to Pastimes Comics and Games, the home of Gold Squadron, where we play X-Wing every Wednesday night, as well as have tournaments the first Sunday of every month. We also play Armada, Imperial Assault, and Destiny on different days. Visit our Facebook page, look up Pastime Star Wars for more.
And before we let you go, just want to remind everybody that the Gold Squadron podcast will be streaming from Worlds. We're going to be streaming both Days of Swiss and during the cut, probably up to around the top 16, depending on how the people from our group are doing. And that's going to be on Twitch. If you look us up, twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. And I don't know if you've seen the official FFG Twitch schedule. They're only planning on streaming X-Wing for the cut. So we are basically going to be your home for the Swiss rounds and the early cut for X-Wing. So we hope to see you there. Again, that's twitch.tv/Gold Squadron Podcast. T-shirt information is in the episode description and on our Facebook. And we hope to see you at Worlds. So let's hang out. Have a good one. Oh, quick cut in here. Forgot to say this. We're also going to be putting on a live show on Friday night during World. So I believe that's May 5th. We're going to be putting on a live show with a bunch of the other podcasts that will also be on our Twitch channel. We're hoping to get the developers involved as well and put on a nice, probably about hour and a half show for you for some good X-Wing content. Now, for real this time. See ya. Gold Squadron out.